I too have been in the technician field for a couple number of years, right? I went to a technical institute. I didn't go the traditional career path of college. I went right into a trade school, learned automotive technician, and got job placed right away. And it was my career for the next 7.5 years. And so I am very much a fan and an advocate of trade schools and skilled learning. And I don't think there's enough of it today. And so that's what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today was just the technician trade in general as it relates to the dealerships and just what your school is all about into producing the product of skilled people to help fix these machines that we sell at these dealerships, right? Everybody, welcome back to this episode of the Dealership Fix It. We have a very special guest that I'm super excited to talk to today. His name is Tim Yarborough, and he is the National Admissions Person for Motorcycle Mechanics Institute, or MMI, a very prestigious school out here in Arizona. And today we're going to talk to him about the service technicians and the motorcycle techs in the field of the dealership. So glad to have you, Tim. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for the invite, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to speaking to you for a very long time, mainly for selfish reasons. You know, before we kind of get into a little bit of your history, I too have been in the technician field for a couple number of years, right? I went to a technical institute. I didn't go the traditional career path of college. I went right into a trade school, learned automotive technician, and got job placed right away. And it was my career for the next 7.5 years. And so I am very much a fan and an advocate of trade schools and skilled learning. And I don't think there's enough of it today. And so that's what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today was just the technician trade in general as it relates to the dealerships and just what your school is all about into producing the product of skilled people to help fix these machines that we sell at these dealerships, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I very much, again, appreciate you coming on. I'm super excited to get into it. So let's do that. Let's just first start with telling us a little bit about you, Tim, and your experience in the motorcycle power sports industry.
Well, I've been in the, I started out, I spent 20 years out as a F&I. I did F&I and automotive and marine and motorcycle power sports, in that industry out on the dealerships for 20 years and absolutely loved it. And then, 21 years ago, I had the opportunity to come over here to the training center. And I really kind of found my home here, you know, and it's exciting because I get to talk with people who love the same things that I do. And they want to get into the same industry that I've been in, that I've, you know, had success in. And it's really kind of exciting for me. So
that's great. You said you were an F&I, you were general manager. What kind of brands were you at the dealership with? Harley-Davidson was one of them?
Mostly Harley-Davidson. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you know, some of the dealers that I worked with in the consulting work, you know, they happen to own a Harley dealership. Some of them own car dealerships and motorcycle dealerships. Some of them, like the Harley-Davidson, like the guy at Hacienda Harley-Davidson, he owned the Harley dealership. We had a custom bike dealership. We had a standalone Honda dealership down the road. And then we had another dealership a couple hundred miles away that sold everything. So yeah, I've been involved in this business for a long, long time, and it's really been fun.
What was the ultimate, you know, pivot or decision that you wanted to move into being in the trade school field now?
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to a traditional 4-year college right out of high school, hated it, but I got a decent paying job out of it, but it was, it wasn't a job that I enjoyed. You know, I mean, I would find myself sitting at my desk, looking out at my bike out in the parking lot going, man, where am I going to go this weekend? What am I going to do this weekend? So daydreaming about motorcycles, you know, and, I one day I was in the local dealership down in Sierra Vista, Arizona. And back then it was just a small little shop. This is, 1970, 80, something like that. And the, it was 1981 actually. And then I was in getting my bike fixed and chatting with some of the guys that worked there. And I realized at that point, I said, these guys are happy. They love their work. You know, I mean, it's not easy work, but they enjoy it. I was talking to my dad one day and he says, why in the world do you want to switch? And I said, you know, Dad, I can count on one hand the number of people that I know that get up in the morning and get to go to work and look in the mirror and say, hey, dude, guess what you get to go do today?
Yeah.
You know, not looking in the mirror going, oh, geez, I got to go to work today. You know, so I wanted to be one of those guys. And that's when I made the switch and never looked back. And it's been great. So I've had a lot of fun.
When you joined UTI, MMI, Universal Technical Institute, mm-hmm. and Motorcycle Mechanics Institute, did you always have the same job doing admissions, or were you working in other parts of that type of business?
No. I came right into the admissions department. You know, and it was a good fit because I was already hiring guys out in the dealerships that came from the school. So I knew what I wanted in an employee. And I thought that, you know, I could impart some of that onto these potential aspiring technicians. And here's the things that you're going to need to do to be successful. And, it's really been a good relationship.
So. Gosh, I'm just remembering my own personal experience with that and talking to the admissions guys at the school I went to, which was Wyoming Tech Institute back in the day.
Okay.
But I remember he went through a whole laundry list of things that I needed to do and, you know, be prepared for, like shaving was one of them, right? You never think of that. You know, I'm a 18, 19 year old kid. And I'm going, man, this guy's going to make me shave every day to go to school. I don't understand it, you know? And I had to have my tech uniform, my shirt tucked in. I had
to
wear a
belt. Tuck your shirt tail in, tie your hair back if you've got long hair, turn your hat around straight, you know? Yeah, those are all things that's part of professionalism. Now, the dealer will have their own rules. You know, some dealers may not be that strict on their professionalism rules, but we want to set everybody up for this is what you can expect when you get out of here and go work in a dealership. They're going to expect this of you. Being on
time. And it
makes
total sense.
Being professional, you know, not just producing a good mechanic, you know, but producing a good employee for somebody. That's really how I look at it.
You're preparing them for the workforce in every aspect of it. Not only the skills that they're learning to repair these products, these vehicles, mm-hmm. but also how they should dress, how they should act, and how they should be professional. Like you said, I look back at it now and I go, duh, that totally makes sense. But as an 18-year-old kid, I'm going, well, I don't want to shave every day.
You don't think about that.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, let's kind of switch gears. Thank you for that. Let's switch gears into the industry itself. So let's just kind of start with giving us a little bit of an overview of the power sports and motorcycle industry right now and the demand for skilled technicians. I always see headlines in every publication that every dealership is always needing skilled techs, or they just need techs in general, right? They'll take anybody and they'll train them through their factory program or their apprenticeship. But give us just a quick overview of what that looks like from your side of the table.
Well, you know, we're still producing mechanics. You know, we have never been able to fill the entire demand. I mean, at this point, I was looking on the employment map the other day. There were like over 700 open positions out there right now, this minute. And we've got 60 people graduating next Friday. So there's plenty of work out there. And as most of your dealers know, you know, most of them have anywhere from a 2 to 3 to maybe even 4 week backlog of work that needs to get done.
Yeah.
Just routine service work. And they just don't have enough bodies. And our job is to put that candidate in front of that dealer so they can interview them and see if they're going to be a good fit.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Moto Hunt Premium. Moto Hunt Premium empowers power sports dealers with data and technology to give the best possible market advantage on every vehicle at your dealership. Moto Hunt Premium offers a suite of features such as real-time market analysis, inventory management, and up-to-date pricing guides like JD Power and NPA. Dealers love to leverage the platform to identify potential inventory risks and potential issues with your online listings, and it also helps to execute make and model strategies, enabling dealers to help move inventory faster and make more profit. To start leveraging our technology at your dealership, go to motohuntpremium.com. That's motohuntpremium.com to learn more and request a free inventory audit for your dealership today.
So, but yeah, we're, you know, I was looking at, I think it was Fortune Business last month. I was reading an article and they're projecting, you know, like 5.5% growth between now and or every year. So there's projected growth out there for sure in our industry. And you know, the power sports business globally is billions. We actually get students from overseas too. We have students from Japan, Spain, Australia, Thailand, Indonesia. So the vast majority of our students come from the, you know, continental United or the United States, the 50 states. But it's tough, you know, just, but it's out there. You know, I think COVID was a big wake up call, you know, cause we saw a little bit of dip in sales a while back, but then COVID, I think, created that need or want to find like other things to do, alternative transportation, things I could do in my off time. You know, people really took a stock in, you know, hey, what am I going to do the rest of my life? You know, life's too short to do something I hate. If I'm going to drag my butt out of bed to go to a paying job every day for the next 20 years or 40 years, it better be something I like.
Yeah.
And so I think that has created a lot of this, you know, uptick in sales, power sports, especially in like the ATV and UTV stuff. I mean, that's gone through the roof, you know, but, you know, I think we're looking at probably 3.5% growth every year between, you know, just in the demand. I mean, the sales are going to be going up about 5.5% over the next 7 years, but about 3.5% in demand for mechanics. And the problem with that, we're kind of caught in the middle. You know, you got the old guys that have been doing it for 20, 30 years already. They're getting ready to retire, run off into the sunset. So we need to replace them with some new talent.
Yeah.
And we need to get guys in there, that guys that want to work, that are willing, you know, that are ready, willing, and able to do the job, but create that environment for them too, where they want to stick it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to touch on a point that you mentioned with, you know, there's a backlog of work in a lot of these dealerships, right? There's customers, because of the increase in sales, that have these vehicles that are always wanting to get, you know, regular maintenance service, or they're trying to get some P&A, you know, installed, or they're trying to fix something that actually broke, you know, whether it be warranty or customer pay. But, you know, I read an article about Pied Piper. They recently did a study where they called, I don't know how many dealers they called, but let's just say it's 1,000 dealers, and the average wait time that they were talking to these advisors to try to get their vehicle in with this mystery shop was over 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And that backlog right there, that's just data that you're going, wow, am I over capacitated with customers from sales, meaning my shop's not big enough, I don't have enough storage. But I'm thinking, and I think you're along the same lines, is we just don't have enough people to do the work in the service department themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So let's talk about that, right? We know that there's a growth happening. It's a $1 billion business. Techs are far and few between, at least the good ones, right? But, yep, you know, there's a lot to be said about the technological advancements as well. What is MMI doing, or some of these other, you know, trade schools, what are they training them into the new brand new stuff, you know, the computers that they're putting into these things, right? It's not all mechanical anymore. It's a lot of it's going fly by wire. A lot of it's electronically controlled.
Bluetooth connectivity, and you know, when a tech can take their phone out of their pocket and dial into the bike's computer on their phone and you'd run a diagnostics. I mean, that's stuff we didn't have 20, 30 years ago, you know? So
maybe even 10 years ago, we didn't.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about some of the training programs that you have available to keep up to date with, you know, the cutting edge stuff that these OEMs are producing every year. It seems like they're getting more advanced. What type of tech goes through your program to learn these things? What type of curriculum do you put in front of them and teach them?
Well, our curriculum, the way we look at this, the student is not our customer. Our customer is the dealer that's going to hire that student down the road. So it's in everybody's best interest, the dealer, our interest, and the student's interest, to make sure that these guys are getting relevant training that's updated, it's current. And since we actually are sponsored by all the major, you know, the leading power sports companies, they actually have input into the curriculum. So they tell us what they want trained and how they want it delivered. And then they also give us bikes every year. Now, we buy a lot of bikes, but we also get a lot of donations from the manufacturers. And brand new stuff that they will send to the school and say, hey, here's the new product for this coming year. Start training these guys on that. And then that creates the need to redo some of the curriculum in those particular areas. You know, like, you know, the Yamaha 3-cylinder 900 cc, you know, and you're like, okay, so students coming into this thing maybe have never seen a 3-cylinder bike, you know. Yeah. And so this is something new to them, but a bike is a bike is a bike. An engine's an engine. Two wheels, two shocks and handlebars, it's a bike. Once you learn engine theory, engine design, fuel delivery, you know, both fuel injection and carburation, electrical systems, chassis and suspension, you can figure anything out, you know. So we work hand in hand with the dealer or with the manufacturers to make sure that what we're teaching them is relevant and it's up to date. Once or twice a year, we hold what we call PAC meetings, Program Advisory Council. We'll get a cross section of the industry. So we might have, we'll have a bunch of dealers. We'll have some independent shop owners, custom builders, race team owners, people from the test track facilities like Capital Technologies, you know, those guys. So they'll sit in on this PAC meeting and they'll be here for a week. And they're pouring over the curriculum to make sure that what we're teaching is what they actually need out there in the field today. And so we invite dealers to come in and sit on that PAC from time to time.
That's great.
So we get their input.
Are dealers asking for any particular things in your curriculum? Are they looking for a certain type of student to be produced out of your school?
Well, I wouldn't say they're asking it. I think it's an expectation. And sometimes our expectations are off. You know, when I first got here 21 years ago, we would run into situations where maybe a dealer would hire somebody and their perception was this guy knows everything already because he's been to school for it. But there are things out there in the real world that we just cannot duplicate here in a training environment. So these guys, you know, they're fresh, they're new. Some of them are scared because it's their dream job and it's their first time on the job, you know. So we have to make sure that we're setting the expectations, not just for the student or the graduate, but we have to set the expectations for the dealer. Hey, this guy's good. You know, his grades and his attendance and his professionalism has proven it. He's good, but he needs a little bit of mentoring when he gets there, you know? Yeah. So don't just throw him to the wolves, you know, start him out with something easy, you know, and then review him in 90 days or whatever and just pay a little bit, motivate him in that transaction. The dealer, the student and us, you know, everybody knows what the expectations are, that this guy's good. He's not an A grade mechanic quite yet. He still has a way to go. MMI is kind of like first gear, you know?
Right.
So
he's lacking experience too. He or she is lacking the experience. And that's really what makes a lot of these great technicians great. Right. Is the time that they put in.
Yep.
Okay. So you mentioned a little bit about some of the the fuel delivery system and the engine and the brakes and all that. EVs are becoming more of a thing, right? Tesla certainly changed the world, and the motorcycle technology has not really picked up on it completely, but we've got LiveWire out there. So what is your school doing about the EV technology that's coming out?
Well, so we have done some LiveWire training. It's not part of the base curriculum. They have done some LiveWire training up in Milwaukee. Some of our instructors go up and teach those classes as well, but it's still kind of it's not as mainstream as like the electric cars are quite yet. It may be another 10 years before we really start seeing heavy production on not just LiveWire. LiveWire is a great bike, but so is Zero. We don't actually have any of that training here as part of the base program. And I think part of the reason is because if we went to Zero and said, hey, we really want to start training on your bikes, so can you send us a couple hundred motorcycles to put in here? I mean, holy cow, that's like half their production, So they're still relatively small. And until we get to that point where it's a lot more prevalent out there, then we'll probably start seeing more of that taking place. I think I heard the other day that I think Honda's in development with something. I think all these manufacturers are, they're probably all looking at EVs. It's just not part of the regular curriculum at this point. Okay. But the rest of the bike is the same thing. Electric bike still has two wheels, handlebars, two shocks, so it's still a bike.
That's it. Okay. So, Let's pivot a little bit to the student, right? So we talked a little bit about MMI, the curriculum, and some of the OEMs that you partner with. I really love your pack, your pack meetings, right? Where you've got all these different entities coming in and giving their once over on the curriculum. And that includes the dealers that were eventually sending these people off to, right, to work. Let's talk a little bit about the student. So first and foremost, what would the ideal student look like when they first inquire about MMI, right? Maybe they're a high school graduate, or they're soon to graduate from high school. You got people coming from all over the country and, like you said before, all over the world, Japan, Australia. What does the normal person look like that wants to enter this field and get some formal education before they enter the actual workforce in a dealership?
Well, it really kind of runs the gamut. I've identified three pretty distinct groups of students. Okay. On one end of the spectrum, you've got the students that, they've been wrenching on bikes most of their life. They've raced motocross. They've maybe even worked in a small shop. And they what they lack is those credentials to kind of take that career to the next level. Okay. On the other end of the spectrum, small percentage, you've got the ones that have probably never picked up a wrench in their life, or, maybe they've tinkered with it and they said, oh, that's kind of cool, but it wasn't quite their cup of tea yet. But doctors, lawyers, software engineers, housewives, I interviewed a young lady out of Minnesota that, she grew up around bikes, only girl in the family, had three brothers, her dad, they all rode, and she would hang out in the garage and help them and hand them tools and stuff. And she just became fascinated by that. And she turned out to be great, ended up going to work in a dealership. And I think last time I heard, this was many years ago, but last time I heard, she ended up in her own shop, So you don't actually have to have a whole lot of knowledge. You got to have that desire to want to learn, So we can teach anybody how to do this job, but we can't teach you to like it. So that's number one. You got to love motorcycles, power sports, whether it's jet skis and four wheelers and side by sides or dirt bikes, regardless, you got to like it. If they have some previous experience working around vehicles, any kind of engines, they took shop classes, that's a plus. It's not a requirement. But they have to be open to learning new things. And they have to be willing to follow the rules, be punctual, be professional, It all carries over to the dealership environment when they're done.
I want to, you, since you brought up shop class in high school, just sharing from my own perspective, that's how I ultimately got introduced to it. I was on the latter part of the people that you described that typically come in, right? I did not have a lot of experience with power sports or motorcycles until I was older, you know, later in high school, or even automotive fixing, you know, becoming a mechanic later on, until I took a shop school because my buddy was in it. But Mike Rowe, you know, from Dirty Jobs, he's always been an advocate of trade schools. And I just want to give a quote that he said, and he goes, he says it verbatim like this: in a very general way, our society has fallen out of love with the skilled trade. Part of the problem is a myriad of myths and misconceptions that surround the jobs themselves. But the biggest cause is our stubborn belief that a four-year degree is the best path for most people. Happiness does not come from a job. And this was in an interview that he's talking about the systematic removal of a lot of these high school programs like shop class or wood shop class or auto club, whatever it is, right? And really, they're just trying to push people into that four-year degree because that's what a lot of these institutions prefer. And so I wanted to touch on that because I put that on our notes today, and I thought it very relevant to this conversation that we're teaching people a skilled job and they have to kind of have a slight introduction into it first before they ever take the first step into buying into the trade school, right? Or getting
a
some type of program to enter it in. So I just want to sidestep that real quick. I thought it was a really neat quote, that was applicable.
Mike Rowe, we love Mike Rowe.
Yeah.
You know, we absolutely love him. Actually, one of my students recently got a $4,500 scholarship from them. And then, cause Mike Rowe actually has it's called the Work Ethic Scholarship, you know, and they have to work for it. I mean, they have to produce a video and all that stuff and go through the process, but you know, if they're willing to do that, they're probably a pretty good candidate, you know?
I love that.
And then, you know, one thing I forgot to mention, you know, so we got that small group on the one end that thinks they know everything, you know, already. And then you got the ones on the other end that understand and realize that they don't know anything and they want to learn it. But the ones in the middle, that's probably the biggest group. Those are the ones that maybe they ride or they've ridden in the past. They haven't done much. Maybe they've changed the oil, changed tires, you know, spark plugs, that kind of stuff. But they got a great sense of satisfaction out of that. And they're like, man, this is cool. This is fun. I could see myself doing this, you know, for the next 20 years or, you know, the rest of my life. And that's probably the biggest group, but they're all ages. I mean, I have 17, 18 year olds coming in the program. I just had two 63 year olds graduate from the program.
Wow.
Yeah. Retired Chicago cop. And the other one's a retired heavy equipment operator, and they want to work on bikes for the rest of their life. So I'm like, hey, let's have at it, man. Let's do it. And
I love that.
And both of those 63-year-olds had job offers in their pocket when they got out of here. So,
wow. And that's a skill that they'll retain forever, and they'll use it professionally or personally in whatever type of capacity they want, because that's something that's ingrained into you once you learn it.
And it makes them happy.
Yeah.
You know, and happy, that's something you can't put a price on. Yeah. I need a paycheck. We all need paychecks because we got bills to pay and that kind of stuff. But for most of our motorcycle guys, I mean, that's important. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to give the dealers a wrong idea. You can hire a guy and not pay him anything and he'll be happy. No, he still has to make a living to support his family, but it's not the most important thing. They're doing this because they want to do something where they get to use their hands and their brains and do something that's actually meaningful to them. So
absolutely. Let's keep talking about the techs that we're churning out of this school. So you've got a couple different programs from what I understand. How do you separate the motorcycle versus the off-road stuff, right? You mentioned earlier ATVs and side-by-sides are, you know, they've just exploded in the last couple years, right? And they're coming out with some really great stuff from Polaris. Can-Am over the weekend just announced the new Maverick R. That's a completely new chassis, new suspension setup. It's getting a lot of love. It's also getting a lot of hate, but we've definitely got an off-road part of the business and we've got an on-road part of the business, right? Harley would fall into that on-road, very much motorcycle only. Right. And you got brands that sell both. And then you've got the Marine and PWC. How do you set up the learning stages? Is it one or the other? Do they learn all of them? What's your average tech looking at when they walk into your school and they have to pick from the options available?
Okay. So we start that process well before they actually show up to start their training. So it starts with an inquiry. They'll go online or they'll pick up the phone and call us and say, hey, I want to get some more information about this. And what do you do? And we actually go through a little bit of an introduction of the school, but then we actually set them up with in a Zoom meeting, and I'll spend an hour and a half with that student and any of their, you know, family members, you know, like mom, dad, or wife, or girlfriend, you know, because everybody's going to be affected by this decision that they make.
Yeah.
So we'll spend upwards of an hour to an hour and a half just interviewing them, showing them the training. And at that time, we actually pick out the brands that they want to do. So they actually, if a Harley guy wants to do Harley, we sign them up for Harley. And then two or three months down the road, they show up and they're going into Harley.
Okay.
Okay. And vice versa. But since we're factory sponsored by the you know, Honda, Kawi, Suzuki, Yamaha, Harley, BMW, anything power sports related that company offers for sale at the dealership or that they're working on in their shop, we're training on. So the Honda guys get generators, mopeds and scooters, four-wheelers, side-by-sides. The Kawasaki guys get the diesel side by sides, the Terex side by sides, the supercharged jet skis, you know, the 310 horsepower jet skis so that's all part of the Kawasaki Power Sports package. Suzuki, all of their, you know, two wheelers, four wheelers, they don't have side by sides and all that, but we get into all of that with all the different manufacturers. Yamaha, in addition to all of their, you know, dirt bikes and sport bikes and side by sides and four wheelers, we do snowmobiles for Yamaha here in the desert, you know. So anything that dealer would need worked on or what they would sell at the dealership that customer needs to get fixed, you know, then these guys are going to get trained on it. And they're not, we separate out Marine. Marine's a separate program altogether. It's boats. Okay. You know, inboard, okay, outboard, that kind of stuff. That's down in Florida. We do have a motorcycle location down in Florida as well, but there's only two locations. We do in Arizona and Orlando, Florida. So, you know, students from those geographic areas can take the training.
Okay. You know? And how long is your typical course if they pick one or two of these different ways?
Yeah. To go? So the shortest program is 48 weeks. Which takes about 11 to 12 months to complete that.
Okay.
Okay. And if they're doing Harley, they get Harley. So, you know, for instance, we'll spend the first 18 weeks just doing general motorcycle mechanics where they're learning how to take an engine apart, put it back together, identify the components, get into the parts computer, let's look up the parts. Then they move on to a 3-week class on wheels, tires, brakes, chassis, suspension, lacing spokes, truing wheels, computerized tire mounting systems. So we have all these 3-week classes leading up to that. After they're done with the core training, then they jump off into their specific manufacturers. And Harley Davidson is 24 weeks just by itself. And that's called late model Harley. So that's the new stuff. Basically, it's everything from current, you know, 23, 24 models going back about 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
Then they will jump off into a 3-week class on the old vintage Harleys from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, getting a good understanding of how the motor company evolved to this point, you know, and you actually get into they actually wrench on antique motorcycles from way back when.
Really?
Then they'll have a 3-week course. Yeah, they'll have a 3-week course called Screaming Eagle, where they get into the dyno jet. You know, building performance, building torque, building horsepower, and then testing it out, making sure that the modifications we've done are going to work. Okay. Now, So that's the 48-week Harley program. Now, if they choose the others, so Honda, Cowie, Suzuki, Yamaha, BMW, they're all 12 weeks each.
Okay.
So the student actually spends a good solid 3 months in just doing that brand. So they pick two of them. So a real popular option, a lot of guys are doing Honda Yamaha, for example. Mm-hmm. We're getting a lot of people are doing Honda Cowie now, you know, because they want to get into some of the, you know, the diesel and the jet skis and all that. Yamaha has the Wave Runners and all. But so they would pick two manufacturers. They would do 24 weeks, 12 weeks in each manufacturer. Then they jump off into a 3-week performance suspension class. So we get into adjusting suspensions on the different motorcycle and four-wheelers, side-by-sides, and dirt bikes and sport bikes, you know, for race conditions. And then they'll have a 3-week course called performance and drivability, and that's where they get their dyno jet training. So they'll spend 3 weeks working dyno flow benches, you know, but the students actually learn how to run the dyno before they leave here. So
that's amazing. And so all of
they pick out the brands they want.
That's amazing. And all of this is a combination between classroom and hands-on in the shop. You know, you've got,
it is going to be mostly hands-on shop time. However, you know, in any hands-on training environment, there's three parts to it, you know, and you know, you probably experienced that when you went to WyoTech. There's the part where they show you how to do it. And then there's the part where they turn you loose and let you start doing it yourself. Okay. So instead of putting them in a classroom for the first 2 or 3 or 4 months, learning it out of a book, we actually have them on a laptop. You're going to spend an hour a day watching the videos and participating in the online class discussions. And then you're going to come in and spend 4 hours a day hands-on in the shop. So it is mostly hands-on shop time. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, I'm just listening to you with all these different programs available. It makes me want to go back to school and learn some of this stuff.
Well, just sounds, you know, fun. The other thing, Jacob, a lot of our students are actually doing a longer program. So they're doing multiple brands. And we have a 60-week program where they could do like maybe Harley Honda,
yeah,
or Harley Yamaha, or any combination of those, you know, or it might be three of the metric brands, you know, Honda, Cowie, Suzuki, you know, or Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, or Kawasaki. And when they graduate, they graduate with an associate's degree of occupational studies, and they didn't have to take any academic classes. There's no English or history. It took us years to get that approved by the Department of Education. So it was a long time in the works, but yeah. So now someone can actually graduate from MMI, not with just the credentials, the certification, but also with an associate's degree as well.
Okay. And what is the average student? Is it a year and a half of learning from the first day of school to the last day and they're getting their graduation? What is that average? Yeah, a year and a half?
It's going to be 11 to 14 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, the vast majority of our students move here from out of state. So they have to relocate for this. And we help them get set up with a place to live. We help them find a job while they're here. And then we'll get them interviewing with dealers before they even graduate. So
that's where I wanted to go next is, what does the job placement look like? Right. So not only do you have a lot of people coming into the school from out of state, but do you also have job placement programs for when they're graduating and they need to go into the workforce all over the country?
Yep.
Okay. What does that look like? Tell me a little bit.
Yeah. So roughly 2 months before they graduate, they're going to tell us, where do you want to go live and work when you're done? And so, you know, a lot of the guys, they get to Phoenix or they get to Orlando and they don't want to leave, you know, because it's sunny, warm, year-round riding. I don't have to shovel snow to get my bike out, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but a lot of them do go back home to their home areas as well.
Okay.
Okay. So they tell us where they want to go. We have a national database of dealers. Right now, I was looking at it. There's over 700 jobs available. So you tell us, you know, where do you want to go live and work when you're done? Okay. Here's a dealer 20 miles from there, or here's a dealer 100 miles from there, or here's a dealer in your hometown. Let's contact that dealer. Let's get your resume updated. Let's send your transcripts. And you're actually going to be interviewing them like this over Zoom. And the dealer will set the dealer up to be able to interview those guys. and we actually send their transcripts to the dealership, so the dealer has them in front of them, or the dealer or service manager, whoever their hiring manager is.
Who typically comes on the Zoom call?
It's typically it would be the dealer and the student.
On
the Zoom call.
Is it typically the service manager that places these open job positions?
In most cases, it's the service manager. But I do have dealers that are very involved. I had a dealer recently out of South Carolina that actually flew out here to Phoenix, and he spent 4 days on campus interviewing prospective candidates. And he got a couple of good ones out of that too, you know, but they took the time to come out and meet these people in person. And then they turn around and help these guys with the little incentives, you know, to get themselves moved out there when they're done. So, but a lot of those guys will have a job offer in their pocket on graduation day. It's not a guarantee, obviously. I can't make a dealer hire somebody, but I tell these guys, I truly believe if you come here and you do what we ask you to do, show up on time, be professional, get along, do the work, put in the time and the effort to get the work done. Their grades are going to reflect that. And there's no reason on God's green earth why you shouldn't have a job in this industry if you do all those things.
Absolutely. I mean, the demand has never been higher. So yeah, if these dealers got 700 open jobs that they're trying to fill.
That's like right now. I mean, I've seen it in the past where it's been 800 to 900. And sometimes like in the wintertime, you know, you don't have a lot of dealers up in Montana and Minnesota and Wisconsin that are adding people to their payroll, you know. So there might be 300 or 400 jobs. But we start a new class every 6 weeks, and we'll start maybe 50 to 60 students every 6 weeks. And then 10 months later, we've got 50 or 60 students that are graduating.
Yeah.
So we have graduation every 6 weeks as well.
I love that. So that being said, you know, we've walked kind of through the curriculum, first day of school, they're going through their programs, they're getting their certification, right? 11 to 14 months. They've now got an associate's degree. They've got a couple job offerings through dealerships that they're interviewing well before the graduation date. That is just, it's fantastic, right? We're putting these younger, most of them are younger through your school, right? Except for the couple 60-year-olds, but we're putting skilled people into the workforce to fix and repair and maintain these machines that bring a lot of joy to our consumers' lives. What would you say the demand changes look like in the future, right? We talked a little bit about the EV maybe being a formidable force in the future as it gains popularity, but how do you see the technician field evolving in the coming years for not only what dealers' needs are in terms of technicians, but also what you respond to as the trade school training these younger individuals in the workforce? How do you see that demand evolving?
Well, you mean the demand as far as the number of graduates or technicians, or just the demand for the training?
Both. You've got your PAC meetings,
you know,
where
the type of training that they're getting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You've got some input from some people in the field that are kind of have a forward looking, you know, type of mentality. What is this going to look like to keep my business profitable, keep my customers happy? We got a lot of machines that we're going to sell that's going to need a lot of repairing. What type of demands are you trying to include in your curriculum or that you're talking about now that might be a future offering?
There's always going to be need for skilled technicians. And you know, that's not going away. We're not going to package these up and send them off to China to get fixed or to Pakistan or India to get fixed. I mean, they got to be fixed here. And so you need bodies, but you need the right bodies. And that's probably the toughest thing for when I was out in the dealerships, the toughest thing was finding good talent. I can find bodies. I could hire people off the street, you know, if I wanted to, you know, nowadays it's like anybody with a toolbox thinks they're a mechanic, you know, because they learned it on YouTube or, you know, that, but they don't have that paperwork. So I think the demand for the skilled trades, any trade, is going to on the increase as technology keeps evolving, as the dealer, as the manufacturer and the dealer needs keep evolving. We need to be aware of that, and they make us aware of it, and we'll be training to that, you know. But the an aspiring technician can have a future in this business, but they got to be willing to work at it. And we have to have the dealers willing to interview them. I'm not, and then if they're the right candidate, go ahead and hire them. you know. But again, as the manufacturer's needs change and their business needs evolve, they'll send us the product. We'll start training on that. Yeah, I don't see it going away anytime soon. That's for sure.
We're not going to have AI repairing these bikes. We still need a good set of hands to do the work, right?
It's not a robot that's going to be able to listen to that engine and figure out what that funny noise is and where do I start looking for it.
Yeah.
You know, yes. A robot can't do that.
Well, you know, that's been the talk lately is with, this ChatGPT just explosion. And, you know, there's a lot of fear that a lot of jobs will be taken in the future by some of this automation and AI, artificial intelligence. But the kind of product that your school and a lot of other trade schools out there produce, there is no replacement for the type of people that are coming to learn skills on how to repair and diagnose and ultimately fix these products. That you need a good set of hands to do that and a good set of experience.
Right? Yep. And you know, our students that ages, like I said, they range anywhere from 17, 18, all the way up to, heck, the oldest one I ever had was 76 years old. And he graduated and went to work at a dealership in Dallas. And, you know, that was kind of cool, you know, because you don't expect that. But that skill level, that's what they need, you know. Yep. Now, they don't have everything. They're not perfect. But you know, we give them the skills that they can get started in this business, and then we turn them over to the dealership, and then the dealership takes it from there. So
yeah, okay. You've often said it, and you said it on this podcast here, that your ideal customer is the dealership that hires the technician being your product. Tell me a little bit about some of the maybe unique challenges after a particular, you know, person would graduate from your school, they get the placement in a dealership. What type of unique challenges are they looking at when they set foot into the dealership? It's day one, it's month one, it's year one. What does that look like for the average tech now in the workforce after your schooling?
Well, on day one, and I've experienced this myself with new techs that I hired into the dealership, you know, they're scared. Mm-hmm. They're nervous. They're anxious. Heck, they don't even know where the bathrooms are yet, you know, let alone how to talk to a customer in front of them on their first day on work. So I think the big challenge would be expectations that we talked about earlier. You know, maybe the dealer has too high an expectation for them, you know, expecting them to be able to, you know, go rebuild an engine right away, you know, and do it quickly and do it accurately at the same time. I mean, you know, it's not just doing it fast. It's got to be accurate, you know, because we don't want that coming back, because now everybody loses, you know. So I think that's one of the challenges. You know, the dealership expected too much of them and they weren't up for it. Or the dealer, you know, maybe the dealer has I don't want to say a poor pay plan, but they need to relook at that pay plan and give that graduate some incentive to want to stick it out. You know, the last thing we want is a guy going into a dealership and staying there for a month or two and then say, oh, this is not for me, and leaving. So yeah. What happened? You know, I mean, you were in love with this business. You were in love with the idea of working on this. And then you got out of the dealership. What changed? So, and that's still something we're trying to figure out, you know, and not all the dealers. I mean, there's dealers out there that do a great job, that do a lot of things right. You know, in fact, I would venture to say most of the dealerships today do a lot of things right, but there's a few things that maybe we could do a little bit better, you know, massaging the pay plan, massaging the, you know, the time off, because, you know, weekends are huge in our business. That's when our customers are out riding and enjoying. And so we pretty much expect that the mechanics are going to be there if I take it into the dealership. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that technician, he's got a life too. A life and wife and kids. And so maybe figuring out a way to, you know, help them balance that, you know, life and work situation a little bit better. Give them a weekend off from time to time, you know, so they can spend time with the family. I've got some other ideas on that too, but I think those are the big challenges, is that, you know, the student didn't know what to expect when they got their first job, and it was beyond what they were able to deliver, or the dealer didn't know what to expect from them, thinking they were going to be a top grade mechanic, but no, they're brand new. They still need that experience. They need that time in the service bay, actually doing some of the work, and be patient with them. If you screw something up, hey, it's not the end of the world. We caught it before it got to the customer, so let's fix it. So they have to have someone watching over them too, a little bit of hand holding, not a lot, but I think just guiding them and making sure that they're doing that first few jobs correctly, I think would be a big help.
An apprenticeship would be probably the most ideal if a shop can offer that, right? Where they're working under a master mechanic for a little while in their first couple weeks.
I've always been a big proponent of mentorship, you know, not an apprenticeship, because, okay, you know, a lot of people think apprenticeship, I'm working for free. No, this is a paid position in a dealership. You're actually a full-on mechanic, you know, but having a mentor that you can go to, some guy who's already had 20 years in this business, and he can look at your job and say, hey, that you did a pretty good job there, man. Think about this, though. You know, let's change this and let's change this out and suggest to the customer we do this. And, oh, okay. Those are those little things that they can't learn in a training environment. And they're certainly not going to learn it on YouTube.
I'm so glad we're having this conversation. As you're talking about this, I'm reliving my memories with my mentorship, right? And it was an older guy named Barry. And, you know, he was an intimidating dude, right? He had he's probably 60 years old at the time. He's passed away since, but he was an older guy, right? And, you know, gray hair, big beard, a big burly guy, right? He seemed like he was 7 feet tall at the time to this, you know, little 20-year-old guy coming in, right? And but he was like that. He was intimidating to look at and meet for the first time, but he was there to help walk me through what this job would look like after the schooling in my first career as a tech. Yeah. And I'm getting washed over with all these memories now of that. And it's fun to think about now as we're talking about it. But,
well, you know, a lot of those older guys are, you know, they don't want to be a babysitter, but they don't mind helping out the new guy, you know, because they understand they're being looked up to, you know, mm-hmm. they're being up on a pedestal, and this guy's coming to you for knowledge, you know, so share some of that knowledge with them. You don't have to share it all, but share it with them as it comes up, and you're just going to make that guy a better technician. And what's good for the dealership is going to be good for me as the mechanic, you know, or as the employee, any employee. If the dealership's successful, then I'm going to be successful.
Absolutely. We were talking about the unique challenges there. You brought up a couple of things that I kind of want to press on a little bit. You talked about pay a little bit, right? That's mm-hmm. always seems to be a common, maybe misconception at the beginning, right? On how we're paid, which of course, most of the industry goes with a flat rate time. Mm-hmm. That they pay hourly per job, right? So if the job takes 1.5 hours by the book time and you're paid $20 an hour, right? There's 20 hours for the first hour and then 10 for that half hour. So it's 30 for the job, right? So do you talk to these aspiring techs, these new trainees a little bit about how dealerships pay or how the world works yes. to make an income after when they're working? Absolutely. What does that look like?
So, you know, we let them know, hey, look, you know, you're not going to be, when you first start out in a dealership, they're probably going to put you on an hourly wage. Okay. Cause they want to look at you. They want to see your work ethic. They want to see your professionalism. They want to make sure you're going to be there on time, and they're going to give you some fairly easy jobs that you can knock out that, you know, just kind of give them an idea how you work, how proficient you are, how efficient you are with your time. And then, the way I used to do it is, you know, I would start them out at an hourly wage. And then after 90 days, I would sit them down and we'd do a review. And I would tell them this when I hired them, you know, and not all the dealerships do this. I think a lot of them do, though. But start them out on an hourly wage. And then at 90 days, we'll take a look and see how you're doing. If I like what I see and it feels to me like you're a good, stable, long-term loyal employee, I'm going to bump you. I'll bump you, you know, $3 to $5 an hour. Mm-hmm. And then let's take a look at another 6 months down the road now that you've had some other more difficult, more complex things that you have to do, and let's see how you're doing. And if I like what I see, then I'll bump you another $3 to $5 an hour, you know. But if eventually they all want to go flat rate because they know that that's where they're going to make their money. You know, you give me a 6 hour job, I get it done in four, I'm still getting paid six, you know. So at the end of a 40 hour work week, I go home with a paycheck that, you know, I'm paid for 60 hours instead of 40, you know. And so they understand that. We do let them know when they're here, you know, this is the most likely trajectory of your pay, you know, when you start out. So be prepared for that. The other flip side of that is, you know, the dealers need to be willing to, and I'm not saying all the dealers, but, you know, a lot of the dealers out there still are kind of antiquated when it comes to their pay scales. And they need to kind of relook at that and rework it so they incentivize these guys for loyalty, longevity, quality work, you know, punctuality, professionalism, those kind of things. But not everybody's motivated by money. You know, like I said earlier, money's important because I got bills to pay. Okay. But if it's something I would do for free, if I was filthy rich and I didn't need the money, that's my calling. That's not just a career. That's my calling. That's something I would do for nothing. Yeah. You know, thank God I've got someone willing to pay me for it. You know? So I think that, again, expectations, making sure the dealer's got the right expectations, make sure the student or the future graduate's going to have the right expectations so that when they do get together on that Zoom call 2 months before he graduates, it's a pretty good fit. They know what to expect from each other. And the dealer knows what they need to do when this guy comes in. I need to get him a mentor. You know, I need to start him out here. And then there's other things you can do. You know, I used to encourage my techs, hey, on a Friday night, go on the dinner ride with the hog chapter. Mm-hmm. You know, and really, yeah. And hey, you know, when you sit down across the table and you break bread with somebody, you learn a lot about them personally. And now that customer doesn't see you as just a mechanic at the dealership, you very quickly become my guy at the dealership. I'm going to take, and then they introduce their friends. They say, hey, I'm going to take you down and introduce you to my guy at the dealership. You know, and it's just that it's relationship building because this business is all about relationships. You know, like in the sales department, I didn't want guys selling if they didn't ride. Because if you don't understand what makes that customer tick, you can't fit them with the right bike.
For a power sports dealer, there are a lot of moving parts that have a direct impact on your income. That's why Moto Hunt Premium was developed. Designed specifically for dealers, Moto Hunt Premium allows you to quickly and easily manage your inventory. With streamlined pricing data from competitive dealership listings, JD Power Pricing Guide, and National Power Sport Auction wholesale prices. Moto Hunt Premium also automatically identifies potential issues with your online listings to help you move your aging inventory and maximize your gross profits. Contact us today to take a test ride of the all-new Moto Hunt Premium and see how we can help your business grow and sell more inventory.
It's going to get the job done that they want. Do they commute every day? Do they take long trips? Do they take people with them on trips? So you don't get them a Sportster, get them a Road King.
That's the flat rate time. You know, you're certainly preparing them for this is how people in our field are paid, right? Which most of the time it's usually with a customer pay ticket, right? So they have to interact with this other position called a service advisor that is the intermediary between you diagnosing the problem and the customer expressing that they have a problem, right? But what about when it comes to warranty times? I know that this has been a real growing pain where the OEMs, even though with your school, have been, you know, very generous in the programs that they support and offering motorcycles to learn on. But when it comes to out in the field and training, warranty times seem to be not only increasing as a benefit for the customer, right? You buy a Harley, you get a year, you get 2 years, you know, Kawasaki's got an extended, it's called almost becoming like the car business, where they're extending their factory warranty or they're giving an extended warranty at the time of purchase.
Right.
Do you prepare the technicians for maybe some of the pitfalls that the warranty times are involved with and how those can be a little stressful?
Yeah, we try to prepare them for that, because, you know, the manufacturers, obviously with the warrant, you know, with the flat rate manual, yeah, this is the expected time. If you take longer than that, now we're, you know, we're doing, you're basically the last half hour is for free, you know, because the customer's only paying for 6 hours.
Yep.
And sorry, son, but you took 7 hours to get that done. You're only getting paid for six. So we do try to instill in these guys, they're on the clock. When these students come in and they're in their manufacturer training courses, like especially our dealership operations class, in the dealership operations class, they punch in, they go get their first work order for the day, go out on the lot, find the bike, they roll it in, put it on the lift, they go punch the ticket, they start the work, and then they punch out when they're done. So we can track their, you know, how fast they've been able to get it done. Some of the guys get really good at it, you know, but, you know, other guys, they're still a little bit, you know, nervous, and, you know, because that's like the first experience that they have of actually like working in a dealership.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we also flip it around. We say, okay, student Jacob, you're going to be my service manager today. So now you have to write up the work orders, track the work orders, schedule the employees, inspect the work when it's done. It's got to be done in this time. So how are you going to do that? What are you going to do? We put them in the parts department. Hey, here's how to set up a parts inventory. Here's how to order all the right parts for that particular job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if a customer comes in the shop and they want ape hangers on the bike, it's not just a new set of handlebars. You know, you got all the other stuff that goes along with it, you know?
Yeah.
So we try to tell these guys, look, when you're working the parts department, the devil is in the details, man. I mean, if you give all those parts of that mechanic to take out to the shop to do that job, and he gets halfway through the job and he's missing one little piece, you know, first of all, he's going to look around that, he's going to spend probably half an hour just looking around his bay looking for the damn thing, you know, and all that time he never had it. So now it becomes not just a warranty or whether it's customer pay or warranty, either way, it's not just a mechanic problem, but it's a problem for the customer because they're not going to get their bike on time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a customer issue, customer service issue. So we do try to prepare these guys for all those scenarios. But again, there are certain things that we can't prepare them for. But yes, definitely customer pay and warranty tickets. We get these guys up to speed on, hey, here's how much you can expect. Here's how much they pay. You know, in general, I mean, it varies, you know, depending on big city, small city, you know, that kind of stuff.
Speaking of small city, big city, with all of your job placement programs and the dealerships that are asking for these positions to be filled, do you see any particular part of the country or certain states, certain regions that are asking or demanding for most of these positions?
I would say the southern tier of the United States is always active, because it's year-round riding. And, you know, the northern states, it's a little bit more seasonal. Okay. But like right now, I've got three positions open in Anchorage, Alaska, you know, and then I've got one in Puerto Rico, you know, the rest of them are all kind of in between. 2 weeks ago, I had a couple positions open on Hawaii, you know, so, there's not any one that really kind of sticks out, but the big markets are going to be like Texas, California, Southern California, especially, you know, yeah. Texas, Florida, but pretty much anywhere across the Southern United States. Yeah. The demand is high, and it's remained high for years.
Makes sense. Yeah. That's where all the customers are, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, Tim, I really appreciate, we're kind of getting close to our end time here, and it's just been a pleasure to talk to you. So I appreciate that wholeheartedly. Let's kind of round out with just a few last questions about the operation side, right? So oftentimes the service department is referred to as the fixed ops, because, you know, you've got variable ops, that's sales, parts is kind of in between the two worlds, but fixed ops is something that a dealer principal, operator, general manager can rely on because it's fixed work, right? You've always got it coming in. As long as you've got the people to handle it, that's a steady income. So as we talk about, you know, some of the aspects of it, right? The service department is technically the backbone of the dealership. How can you convey messages to dealerships that are looking at their dealership and they're looking at their fixed ops department and they're going, I want more, I want better, I need to attract talent, I need to grow these guys. What are some things that they can acknowledge and maybe get a little bit better in their service departments to help, you know, lift it up just a little bit more? They need a few percentage points out of it, you know, every month more. They want a better lifestyle for their technicians. They want to make sure that these guys are being appreciated for their skills and their hard work. What kind of message would you have to these operators that are looking at their fixed ops departments today?
Well, I've always kind of believed that happy cows make good milk. Okay.
That's a great saying.
Yeah. And not just that, but when they're facing that customer, they're toe-to-toe, face-to-face with that customer, you want that customer to feel good about whether it's sales, their purchase, or their service work. You want them to feel welcome in your dealership, no matter what department they're interacting with at the time. Okay. So, you know, going back to weekends off, you know, I mean, weekends are crucial. We have to have people watching the store during prime riding season, prime riding times. But I don't have to have everybody there on a Saturday. Maybe if I've got like eight techs, give two of them off that Saturday, that weekend, and then the following weekend, two other mechanics. So they have that quality time with the family. The pay thing is a big thing. I mean, the pay in this industry has come a long way from the time when, you know, I mean, 25 years ago, I think the average labor hour back then was like $75-$80. And it's like, what, $120-$125 now. So everything's gone up. So has the pay. It's still a little bit lagging. You know, I mean, the guys in this business probably don't make it quite as much money as a guy working at the diesel truck stop, you know, because they're, you know, they make more money. But I think as the dealers, if they can massage that pay plan a little bit, just get better, they don't have to give it all to them up front. A couple of suggestions I would make, you know, when you think about the investment that the students made in their training. So most of them, they've had to pick up and move here from somewhere else. Some of them have left their families behind. Some of them have brought the whole families with them. I don't care if you're moving 200 miles or 2,000 miles. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So they've made that commitment to make the move. They've invested in their education, you know, $25,000, $30,000 and up. They're going to have student loan payments when they're done. Okay. So I would suggest to maybe a dealer, if it's feasible for you economically, offer this guy that, hey, I'll make your student loan payments for you if you come work for me. I mean, they're not huge. Typically, the student loan payments range anywhere from a couple hundred bucks to $250 a month. It's not like a four-year college where they got a $600 a month student loan payment, but a couple hundred bucks, you know, $100 a paycheck every 2 weeks, throw that extra $100 in there to help them with their student loan payments. That goes a long ways. Pig Trail Harley Davidson down in Rogers, Arkansas, just called us last week and said, hey, we're willing to put up $10,000 in tuition reimbursement for these guys. That's how badly they need techs. And I have a lot of dealers across the country that do that. Not all of them, but things like that. Allowing quality family time, creating that. You can't motivate someone to do something they don't want to do. That's another thing I believe. But you can create the conditions where they will motivate themselves. So if you make that work environment more like, hey, you're part of our dealership family now, and we're going to take care of you, and we want you to be happy, you know, in return, you need to be loyal. You need to be stable. You need to show up on time and do the things we ask you to do. And you do it with a smile on your face. but we will take care of you. Maybe host a family night at the dealership. Invite the Tex families in. Provide food, and maybe even open it up to the general public. I mean, there's people out there, they're fascinated. They would love to learn what the inner workings of a dealership would be like.
Absolutely.
Because they've never seen the back. They've maybe seen it from a distance. Little things like that. I just think, like I said earlier, a lot of dealers out there, most of them do a great job. There are some things we could do better, like in pay and work-life balance. And I think that just creates that environment where they want to stay with you.
What about a tool stipend? We didn't even really talk about that.
Yeah, so these guys are going to graduate with roughly $1,500 worth of tools. Most of them are hand tools. They don't have the specialty tools. But that's another thing. If you have a well-equipped crib, tool crib with the specialty tools especially, eventually these guys will start buying tools. I mean, like most mechanics, hey, you can never have enough tools, right?
Right.
So give me the catalog, and as I get that money, I'll start buying some of these things over here. But for right now, I need that tool to pull this part out, or I need that. And so having a well-equipped tool crib, I think, is important. And then also having that seasoned mentor to kind of take
Yeah.
them under their wing a little bit. I think those are all helpful, definitely.
The dealerships that I always worked at, the Snap-on truck rolled up every Tuesday, and the Matco truck rolled up on every Thursday. I was a Snap-on guy myself, but yeah, I
There
mean,
you go.
right out of tech school, I needed the bare essentials, which was, sockets and ratchets, wrenches. We got pliers, we got picks, we've got screwdrivers, all these other things, right? And I'm not even getting into some of the air tools, which I don't even think air tools are a thing now with some of the battery technology now. DeWalt has some great
Yeah.
tools that are powerful enough to take off a big half inch
Yeah.
lug. So
Yeah. Well,
there's
we actually have a Snap-on office on campus.
of course you do.
So these guys, they meet with the Snap-on guy when they start, and he gives them a whole list. Hey, you're going into Harley. Here's a list of tools you think you're going to want to have at some point. Don't
It
have
makes
to have them all
sense.
up front, but here's the list. You're going to Kawasaki here, so on and so forth. And then about a month before they graduate, we hand them the tool voucher. They can walk in there and they can purchase tools off that list. But while they're in school, if they have a little extra money laying around, they can sign up and create an account at Snap-on. They can start paying into it, and they get up to 50% off if they're paying it out of their pocket. So
Yep, I
that's
recall
kind of
that.
nice. Yep.
So for the general managers and operators and service managers that are out there, I'm sure they already know this, but let's just kind of say it out loud, right? So this technician that you're placing a job for, that you're looking to hire an MMI graduate from, they've just spent the last 11 to 14 months learning the different programs. They've probably had to finance their education, right? They've got some student loan debt. They've had to buy several thousand dollars worth of tools and a toolbox just to even get started in this field. And they're coming into your shop day one, a little scared, a little timid. Maybe they haven't had any dealership experience. So let's take it easy on these guys, right? And let's grow them. Let's pay them properly. Let's be fair with the environment, right? Because not always the environments are the greatest, right? Some of these techs can be a little bit, not the friendliest to one another, but most are. But I guess is the last question that I'll pose to you here, Tim, is we've gone through this life cycle really of the tech through education, and let's just say they've worked in the field for several years now. They've now got experience under their belt. They're loyal and happy at the dealership. What does the continuing education look like for a lot of these service technicians years into their experience? What do you recommend? What is available out there for the guys that have already been in the field for a couple of years?
Well, all the major motorcycle or power sports manufacturers, they have advanced training programs. In fact, Harley-Davidson University, we actually have a Harley-Davidson, we have an HDU office right down the, well, cl not office, but classrooms. Mm-hmm. And every week I've got people in here from around the country that are going, they're already working in dealerships, and they flew back in on Sunday night. They're here on Monday through Friday. They're doing their dealer training, but all the manufacturers have that. Even some of the manufacturers that we don't actually like, mechanics that are already working in Can-Am dealerships. We've done that for other, you know, several companies. So to continue that and keep your employees motivated, they need to continue growing in their knowledge and their skill set. So how are you going to do that? Well, I don't have the time to do it as a dealer. My service manager certainly doesn't have the time to do it, motivated and grow them so that they'll stick it out with you.
Absolutely.
And someday that guy's going to become your top mechanic, maybe even your shop foreman or your service manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there's a lot of success stories with that scenario right there.
Tons. Yeah. Go to the Born Free shows when they have the custom Born Free custom bike shows. Walk through there and you'll see a lot of MMI graduates that are building custom bikes, and you see the things that come out of their mind. Go down to Supercross and walk through the pits, and you'll meet MMI graduates. I would encourage any dealer, if they're in town, if they're in Orlando or in Arizona, come to Phoenix area, come in and take a tour. I mean, there's dealers in this town right now that hire our graduates that have never been here.
Wow.
And so I would really encourage them, come in and take a look, walk the halls, meet some of our instructors, and really get a feel for what we do. And then, and I think that will help them really truly appreciate what some of these students go through to get this career going.
I think every one of them should, whether they're trying to hire MMI graduates or not, they at least see what kind of people you're producing.
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's great, Tim. And certainly thank you for all the time that you spent with us and answering all my questions and just kind of giving us a glimpse into what this looks like for the dealer operators out there looking to, you know, hire and fill these technician roles that they have had open and are always needing.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how we can get a hold of you, what's your website, what's your email, LinkedIn?
Well, so they can call me direct. The number is 623-879-4381. Okay. They can email me at tyarbrough@uti.edu. And I'll do my best to answer any and all questions. I do have other parts of my job that I got to take care of, so be patient. I may not get back to you right away, but I'll make a note and I'll definitely get back with you if you have questions or they just want to talk about the business a little bit.
For sure. So, we'll include all that into the show notes for any dealers that are looking at wherever they're hearing this or listening to it or watching it. We'll have that in the link so that they've got it there available. They can reach out to you. We'll also include a link to the MMI website and any last parting words before we say goodbye to you.
You know, I just enjoyed the heck out of this, man. I really did. You know, I didn't know what to expect, but yeah, this turned out to be a great experience. And some of this stuff is stuff I think about all the time. I just haven't really had a chance to talk to anybody about it, you know, but thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's super important. And guys like you that are doing the work that you're doing to provide these skilled people in the trade, it's an awesome thing you're doing. And I can't thank you enough. I've come from this. I've had the experience of being a student in a trade school, and I owe everything I am today to that first step that I took. So I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate what all the trade schools are doing, churning out all these skilled labor people. So I just really appreciate it. So I think we'll call it a day on the podcast here. Everybody, thanks for listening. Definitely like, subscribe, so on and so forth, yada, yada. You know, check us out. We're on YouTube, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on all these mediums. You can definitely look at us on any of these, listen, watch, and check us out for the next episode. But until then, we'll see you next time, and we appreciate you.
Later.
Thanks, Tim.